Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there. Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. Military suicide is a tough subject to talk about, but extremely important that we do. Our guest today has been involved with suicide prevention for more than two decades. Before I introduce him, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USA, where we take care of our own, with additional sponsorship from Blue Cross, Blue Shield, FEB Dental, and Blue Cross, Blue Shield, FEB Vision. Together, they make Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I say it every week, we love them too. Now I'm excited to introduce Keith Hodel, Chief Executive Officer of Stop Soldier Suicide. Keith, welcome to the show. I'm getting a little hoarse here.
Yeah, thanks, Sergeant Major. Happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you taking your time to come on. Before we get started, could you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So CEO at Stop Soldier Suicide. I've been doing suicide prevention, as you mentioned earlier, about 22 years now, from public health and clinical backgrounds, and came to this organization 8 years ago to help kind of pivot and stand up the clinical arm of what we do now with our Roger Wellness.
Yeah. How did Stop Soldier Suicide get started, and what's the mission?
Well, the mission for us is civilian parity. I mean, collectively, we don't believe that it should be more risky to serve your country and come back and have higher rates of suicide than the average population. I mean, obviously, our vision is no suicides, but our mission that we focus on is we want to make sure that military service and veteran status is a protective factor. We got started 15 years ago with our three founders, all of whom were officers in Afghanistan, came back from combat tours and recognized pretty quickly they were losing, more of their team to suicide than they did back during their combat deployments. And so stood up Stop Soldier Suicide to solve that problem.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I always wonder is why don't we talk about what the conditions of war may be before we ever go to war? That's another subject probably to talk about. I mean, because we don't, I mean, I went to war at 18 years old, and nobody told me what I may go through. And when I come out of war, I struggled for, we'll talk about this later, but I struggled for a little while just sort of getting back into life, into society. How does it work? If I was struggling with the thoughts of suicide or had, a loved one I thought might be struggling with that, the same thing, how would I get in touch with you guys? How would I get in touch with Soldier Suicide? And what would happen next?
It starts with just raising your hand and saying, I need help, either for myself or a loved one, right? And we can talk about how that can sometimes be a hard thing to do. But, reach out for Roger Wellness, which is our clinical arm, at goroger.org, all one word. Or you could call our hotline number, which is 844-647-1354. Either of those pathways will get you in touch with somebody right away within minutes, and then we'll take it from there and assess your safety and then move into what kind of clinical pathways might work for you.
Do you get a lot of younger soldiers or older soldiers or a mixture of both that come to see you guys?
Yeah, we really see folks across the gamut. It's a dynamic we can get into. We do know that for younger soldiers and those that are transitioning, suicide rates are much higher, right? The 50% at least higher than the civilian rate. But the big numbers of suicides come from older vets who are going through things during middle ages, and you know, some of them go through things during older age that put them at a special risk. So we see folks across the gamut.
Yeah. One of the things I've always thought about, we always talk about active duty or veterans. Do we ever talk about families or you know, spouses that taking their life by suicide?
Yeah, 100%. Our organization serves the veterans in terms of clinical treatment, but we embrace the entire family context, however that veteran might define it, when we're talking about safety planning, you know, aftercare, how do you stay safe during, you know, between treatments. And, you know, one thing we know is, you know, isolation and not having supports are big drivers of suicide. So we try to build that net and include military spouses and other family members in that solution.
Yeah. One of the things I think most of the people sort of go through, I'm assuming now that they just don't talk to people, that they sort of get back and whatever their issues are, sort of keep them to yourself. I would think now it's hard to get them to reach out to help. We're going to talk about that later. But hey, do most of your clients, are they veterans, or do you have a lot of active duty that come and see you too?
95% of our clients are veterans. We do see active duty, and as an organization, we've worked with a number of installations over the years to look at their, you know, suicide practices. But typically, folks that are serving will look kind of on site, on facility, and they have resources there that they tend to go to.
Yeah, how do you get the word out about you know, what you guys are doing, or how people can reach out to you? Do you take you do it on social media, or do you market yourself, or do anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important thing, right? Because we know that, you know, 2/3 of people are not going to proactively raise their hands
and say, "I got a problem."
Yeah, help, right. And so we, you know, from the very beginning, we've said, you know, we have to be a proactive company, not simply a, you know, build it and they will come kind of organization. So, you know, we do, you know, digital advertising based on factors that suggest folks that we're reaching folks who are at higher risk. We have partners that refer folks to us. We're part of the Face the Fight Coalition and work with a number of organizations to make sure that, you know, that we're getting people who have you know, significant risk that we're able to serve. So
yeah, I would imagine. Do you track what service they come from to? I mean, Army, Navy, Marine Corps.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Most of our folks are Army, which you would expect, right? It's the biggest branch, followed by Marines, and then Navy, and then Air Force folks.
Yeah. Last question. We got to take a quick break. Is a lot, most of them combat arms personnel, or again, different MOSs, or does it matter?
In terms of risk, people think, well, there is a special risk for people who've deployed. What we see is it's people that have not deployed, never seen combat, have just the same suicide risk rates as those who have. And so it's not relegated to, like, you know, special operators or, you know, people who've seen, you know, combat. It really is across the spectrum of, you know, the, you know, services.
Wow. I would have probably tied that to combat. So you're saying it doesn't matter if they deploy or not. That's interesting.
The research bears that out. And there's a couple of reasons for it. I mean, one might be when you deploy, right, you are part of something bigger than yourself, right? If you're in a combat theater, you know, you look to your left and you look to your right, you know, you've got support there. You've got a purpose. You get up every day, you know exactly what you're going to do. If you haven't deployed, a lot of these folks still have the same kind of underlying risk factors, but it may be that you feel like you're not doing as much as you could be or the next person, right? So really, you know, there are exceptions, you know, within small pockets of, you know, people that have deployed multiple times, right, or are much higher risk. But simply, you know, being in a combat theater by itself doesn't necessarily mean you're going to come back with, greater risk factors than someone who hasn't.
Yeah. One last question, then I promise we'll take a break. You make me think about all sorts of stuff here now. So I guess if you deployed a lot, I talked to a guy when he happened to be an operator and when I was still on active duty, and he deployed 7 times in and out of Afghanistan. And 6 month trips and come back 6 month trips. So I would think as long as he's active and he's doing stuff, everything's okay. But when that stops, when he retires, then that stress may come on, I think, probably, huh?
Yeah, and even the multiple deployments while you're still in service, I mean, that could be really wearing. I mean, you're in a heightened adrenaline state all the time. You know, you're in uncomfortable new situations. So, you know, I think over time, the aggregate deployments can put these folks that are serving at greater risk while they're in service,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to lie to you this time. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk about some of the challenges to reducing, hopefully eliminating, veteran suicide. So I know you're not going to go anywhere. Stay right there. We'll be right back. This is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack Gale Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major Army. If you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are, because we're talking about our veteran community and our active duty service members, about saving their life, about preventing suicide. Please like us, click on that subscribe button below, and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at purdueglobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do, and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Keith Hodel, the CEO of Stop Soldier Suicide. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing here at the American Freedom Foundation on behalf of our veterans and their families. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at theamericanfreedomfoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Keith, active duty service members and veterans find it difficult to, I know, talk to me personally now, to talk about issues, because people might perceive them as weak, especially when it comes to mental health issues and really thoughts of suicide. I know that when I was on active duty, I'm not going to tell anybody I got a chink in my arm or something's wrong with me. I'm just going to soldier on and do my job. And that is that one of the biggest challenges, in helping them? I mean,
I think that's true, both whether, you know, you're active duty or you're a veteran, right? I mean, when we talked with active duty soldiers, one of the things that came up pretty quickly was, look, I don't want to let my guys down, right? I don't want to be the weak link in the chain. And so changing that narrative to you have to be mentally ready to be mission ready, and encourage them to look beyond the stigma and recognize that it's okay to reach out for help, whether you're struggling with, depression or some mental health condition or suicidality. And of course, that's true for veterans. I mean, 66% of the people that come to us have never talked with anybody in their lives about their suicidality.
Oh, yeah.
So stigma plays a big part of that. Sergeant Major, just like you were referencing, it is difficult. It goes against a lot of the norms around what it is to be a man, right? Because most of our clients are men, although we still serve women. And so there are a lot of barriers. I've seen it get better over 20 years, but you know, I think I'd be naive to say that it's you know, gone away.
Well, the problem is especially when you talk about officers in the military and non-commissioned officers, you're thinking about promotions. You know, if I'm a lieutenant colonel, I'm thinking about if I'm a colonel, I want to get promoted to general officer. And if you go in and say, hey, look, I got a problem, then there's a perception, not saying it's true or not, but there's a perception that could affect your, you know, your promotions. And same with enlisted, same thing. It could affect your promotion. And even if you take it a step farther, if you're in the business world, and you tell your, you know, the guy you're working with or the woman you're working with, say, look, I have some issues. Will that affect my promotion in whatever business I'm in? So it's just, it's really tough to sort of, you know, to reach out there to ask for help, I guess.
Yeah, it's pervasive. That's one of the reasons why I think our Roger Wellness and Stop Soldier Suicide kind of writ large is so compelling, is because we don't report anything to anyone. I mean, we are totally funded by generous donors, most of them giving $5, $10 at a time to allow us to do this, you know, high quality work. And when folks come to us, when we treat veterans, all that stays in-house. It's never disclosed anywhere further.
Yeah. But I'd also think a lot of the people who come see you, they may self-medicate with alcohol or drugs and stuff like that. Yeah. And that really causes, you know, more problems. When they're getting to that stuff,
we see that about 40% of our clients have some kind of alcohol issue going on when they come to us. And so even though we don't provide specific treatment for substance abuse, we certainly work with clinical providers that can help with that. And you know, in addition to the treatment part of what we do, we have an extensive resource and referral piece, so that folks who have, you know, housing insecurity or, you know, financial issues, we got a team of folks that can help get them to the right people to help solve that part of it. Because, you know, we know those are all compounding factors if you're already struggling and feeling potentially suicidal.
Yeah. Last thing, this is so interesting to me. Last thing, I'm going to ask you one more question. I tell people all the time, if they're stressed out, they ought to work out more. I mean, I do. I try to do something every day. I do an hour and 5 minutes at the gym. Of course, this is not really a workout. I play 4 hours of golf or I walk 5 miles. But every day, mentally, I want time where I have my own little space, where I'm in my own little world. Is that good advice, I guess, for somebody to get out there and sort of release that pressure, I guess?
I think that's good advice for life in general, right? And certainly if you are struggling with mental health conditions, I mean, there is a body of evidence that shows that, you know, exercise, however you do it, I mean, get up and, you know, I go for a 3 mile walk, right? My knees won't let me run anymore, but, you know, I do it every day. And that's, like you said, that's my time. I can process things. And even though it's not as rigorous as a lot of people, just embedding that into my lifestyle, I know helps me, you know, regulate emotionally. And that's true for our clients too. I mean, when we talk about the safety planning piece of it, you know, that's something that's really threaded in there is, you know, not only get out and, you know, get involved in your community, expand your network of friends, but also, you know, get out there and be active, however that works for you.
Yeah. And the other side of that, if I don't do that, I don't feel good. If I don't get my workout, I feel terrible. I feel like I'm cheating myself. Let me ask another question. On one hand, people who are struggling should never hesitate to ask for help. I know that's true. But what should you do as a family or friend or a coworker if you're worried about them? I mean, should you talk to them? Should you say something to them?
Yeah, probably myth number one in the suicide prevention is, well, we don't want to talk to people because it might put that thought in their head. The thought's in their head, right? And so actually asking the question, you know, gives them an opportunity to finally at last say, okay, I can share this with somebody because it's eating me up alive, right? And so it's also a difficult thing to do for family members, right? It is very hard to go to somebody that you love and say, hey, I'm really worried about you. Are you suicidal? And I struggle with that in my own life. Like I said, I've been doing this for 20 years, raised five daughters, and there have been times when I've been concerned enough to have to ask that question. And you would think somebody like me who deals with it every day, it would just be the easiest thing in the world. It was very difficult.
Yeah. But
it's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah. But the thing about it, your kids or your family is different than somebody else. You know, on top of that, somebody that you don't have that kind of relationship. So it's tougher to talk to maybe to your family member. The other side of that is my wife is probably my sounding board. I'm sure yours is too.
Right.
And
yes.
And so I may tell her a lot of things that I won't tell anybody else. She really gives it, unfortunately, she gives me some honest feedback. You know, sometimes I don't want it, but she does a good job. I would imagine a lot of people come in, they probably confide with their spouse more than anything else.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, obviously for those of us who are married, or particularly if you've been married a long time, that person probably knows a lot more. You may not even be realizing something until they tell you, right? But for anybody that you're concerned about, it's it takes some bravery to ask the question, because when you ask the question, you may get an answer that is something you don't want to hear right now. I've often said in the work that I did over 20 years, nobody ever came at a convenient time to me to say, hey, can you help me out with this problem? You know, it was, 4:58 on a Friday, and I'm sitting at my desk, right? So, but that said, it really is important that you're able to do that, and you do it from a caring perspective. And, a couple of things to think about if you are concerned about somebody is, this doesn't have to be a time where you try to solve the problems. You try to find the root cause. It's just a time to talk about how safe are you right now, and what do we need to do to keep you safe until we can think through this a little more, whether that's mental health treatment or something else.
Yeah. Well, the other side of that is sometimes just listening is good enough. If you ask the question, hey, look, are you doing okay? You want to talk? And they, you may not say anything, because I've had a few friends where they just talk and I just sit there and listen, maybe just nod my head.
I would say that's the best thing you can do when because like I said, this isn't the time to judge or solve problems. This is the time to let this person open up to you so that they have an opportunity to try to express the reasons they may have for dying, and you're listening and thinking about, well, how do we refocus that on all the reasons that you have for living? But you want to be careful about jumping in and trying to solve those problems, because right now they're really struggling.
Well, let me say one more thing. You're a lot smarter than I am, but I just say you have to let them solve their own problem. You may maybe give them, because I don't want to give them a solution that's good for me. I want them to give me their solution, at least try to work a way that they finally come out and say, well, maybe I ought to try this. Well, that's a good idea. Or give them some thoughts about maybe some solutions. If you solve it for them, it just is probably not going to work, I don't think.
Yeah, and I would say from our seat in the process, it's like we need to get a hold of your suicidality first.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's all kinds of drivers and triggers and risk factors that you may have, but let's figure out what we have to do to be safe right now, which is why, 99% of the clients we see have done safety planning with a trained professional, right? How do we keep you safe? And then how do we manage this acute condition that you may find yourself in? And then we work on, what does that look like in the long term?
Well, and you just brought up a really important point. A lot of guys like me, I'm not trained. So if you have somebody that has a problem, send them to somebody that's trained that can assist them. Don't try to solve their problems. Because I know as a young soldier, when I was in the Army, I think I could solve anything. But I eventually figured it out, I guess, when I was a staff sergeant, maybe a sergeant first class, that I sent them to the chaplain, send them to the doctor, send them whatever. But don't get into something that, I actually had, I probably shouldn't tell you the story, but I will. I was a battalion sergeant major at Fort Knox, and they brought a guy to me that said, in fact, I was a brigade sergeant. Guy told me, he said, I have a guy in my unit that's talking about taking his life by suicide. And I said, well, okay. And I knew the young man. I said, oh, tell me to come up. And I said, hey, look, buddy, why don't you be my driver? I'll drive, and I drove around, and for a couple of weeks, I let him drive, and I talked to him, and I chatted with him a little bit. And then I think it was about maybe 3 weeks later, they called me on a Sunday afternoon, and he had tried to take his life by suicide and put, you know, whatever the exhaust into his right. car and did all that stuff. And so, you know, I went in and told him, hey, so let's, you know, do whatever we got to do. I can't help him. Let's make sure he gets to the right people. But I thought I could help him. And I think that's probably a downfall of me. I maybe should have sent him to somebody a little bit quicker, but you just never think people are going to do that. And so back to your point is don't be afraid to say, look, how bad it is and understand that you can't solve that problem. You need to send them to a professional to help them with whatever the issues are.
Right. It's just like if you have an acute medical condition, you go to the ER, right? And they stabilize you. They figure out what's wrong. Yeah. They do whatever they need to do to keep you safe. And then you go to, you know, another professional perhaps to help figure out what's your long-term treatment plan look like.
Yeah. Is there one thing that tends to push people towards suicidal thoughts? Is there one thing that really pushes them in that direction?
Well, when you think about the dynamic of suicidality, right, when people are ruminating about this, they are usually at that point feeling trapped, a failure, hopeless, maybe helpless to get out of the situation they're in. Coming from a place of real psychological pain. And so they're not able to see all the things they have to live for, right? And so, you know, when you're in that kind of state, then any kind of trigger could potentially set you off down that spiral towards, you know, taking action, right? Engaging in some kind of risky behavior or a suicidal attempt. So, I mean, when you're looking for those things, I want to make sure I'm answering the right question. I mean, it is somebody who is in significant distress and maybe saying things like, it's better off if I'm not around, or, you know, life would be so much easier if I wasn't here. But, you know, threaded into that is this sense of hopelessness. And, you know, when you look at things, and I think this is really particularly true for transitioning veterans, it's isolation, disconnection from supports, from friends, from family. It's a lack of a sense of purpose. And then it's, to some extent, the emotional dysregulation piece that I was just talking about, the inability to kind of process through that. And so when we're dealing with folks within the Rogers system, you know, we work on all of those things, right?
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about sometimes people are reaching out and we don't hear them. You know what I mean? People are out there and they say certain things and you're so involved in your life that you're not necessarily right. listening. Because I can think of times at different assignments I've had that somebody gets, maybe takes their life or gets caught drinking or something like that. And they say, well, yeah, I knew the guy had a problem or she had a problem right. and I really didn't say anything. So I think we have a tendency to say, no, that can't be true. No, he's not doing or she's not doing those kind of things. So I think we just, in some cases, put blinders on.
Well, I think the challenging thing, which is why we work so hard on finding people when they are at increased risk, is that all the things you talk about are things that millions of people experience every day, mental health problems, financial stressors, relationship issues, but only a very small percentage of those people actually think about, make a plan for, or go on to attempt suicide. So I would say err on the side of just asking and talking, because you never know, you know, where that person is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just don't be afraid to ask that question. Are there studies that have been done to determine how many people each suicide affects? I know I've heard a couple of studies talk about 20, 30, 40 people that once somebody takes their life, I guess.
Yeah. I think the most credible research I've seen is that each suicide directly affects about 140 people who knew that person. And obviously it's like a pond with ripple effects. The people closest to them, you know, that 8, 10, 12 people that are family members and close friends are profoundly affected. But, you know, as many as 140 are people who knew that person well enough to, you know, call them up, talk to them on the phone, you know, have a conversation. So yeah, it is a significant kind of spreading impact for each person that takes their life, yeah. For sure.
Oh, wow. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about, I want to hear some success. You know, we're talking about a lot of stuff right here, but let's talk about some success stories. I want to hear those. So stay right there, Keith. We'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Now here's a word from one more of the organizations that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Well, welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Keith Hodel, CEO of Stop Soldier Suicide. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that affect each one of you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please let me know what you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Keith, I'd like our audience to hear a couple of quotes from clients who've been helped by Stop Soldier Suicide. Here's one that said, I'm no longer hopeless because I was able to get away from the original hopelessness situation and stabilize. Another one says, just getting a call the same night I was submitted the request for help was huge. I can never be sure, but I believe just knowing that someone cared helped prevent a suicide attempt. How do you feel when you hear these kind of things?
Well, I mean, I it's incredibly gratifying. And, you know, with every client, there are similar stories. And so I think it's really a testament to the people that work with our Roger Wellness team in being able to provide that kind of responsiveness, right? You know, it's 2 minutes average to when we're able to actually reach out to somebody if they submit a help request. It's 7 days from raising your hand to being in treatment. And so, you know, it's something that we've worked really hard to be, because we know the last thing you want to hear when you're struggling with suicide is somebody will get back to you at some point, not knowing when that is, right? And then when you think about the first testimonial, Sergeant Major, it's as we talked about earlier, these people do come to us in hopeless states, right? And, you know, an important part of what we do is try to stabilize that. And then the treatment component of what we do, which is only one aspect of what Roger does, is to then help them be able to work through those crises down the road, over the next year or 5 years or whatever, when those feelings may recur and that, you know, that hopelessness starts to ratchet back up.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I hate is when I call a number and I get somebody to leave a voice message or something like that. So I guess when they call you, they don't get a voice message, or do they get a voice message and then you call them back immediately?
No, they get a human being.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. They get a human being that will talk to them. During that first phone call, they'll just have a conversation with the peer about, you know, where are you at, get a sense of, you know, your state of mind, you know, how suicidal are you if you are? And so that then we can decide, is this somebody that we need to get in to see, you know, if it's 2 a.m, do we need somebody, you know, at 9 a.m. that can reach out to this person and start treatment? Or is this somebody that we can, you know, put in the queue and do a risk assessment and then proceed with treatment. So, I mean, it is really important to us that not only that we find the right people, but that when they are courageous enough to raise their hand, we can actually be there in that moment to help them work through it.
When they go through counseling Is there a certain amount of time they stay in counseling, 6 months, a year, 2 years?
It really depends. The average is 3 to 4 months. So the average is about 12 clinical sessions. Some clients, you know, they may be with us throughout the entire year. You know, in some cases, it could be longer. For some folks, just doing the risk assessment and, you know, meeting with, you know, one of our clinical providers a couple of times may be good. And like I said, we do safety planning every time. So if they've gone through one or two or three sessions and they're like, you know, I'm feeling much better now. You've taught me some skills. I know I could come back. Then, you know, we'd assess their safety and then, you know, help them decide what that next step might look like. But it's about 12 hours or 12 sessions of treatment over the course of about 3 or 4 months is typical for those that enter treatment.
Do you follow up with them, say they go through a program, do you continue to follow
100%.
Up with them for how many years? Forever? Or?
Well, we follow up pretty closely for a year. If there is a client that, you know, a particular wellness coordinator is worried about, or if we follow up and there is an issue, then of course we would extend that period of time. But, you know, we have a scheduled follow-up process for the year after discharge planning.
Yeah, wow. Hey, you mentioned earlier, but please tell us again, if someone needs help, someone needs help or knows someone who needs help, what should they do?
They can reach out to us on the web. That's at goroger.org, goRoger, all one word. Or they could call our 24/7 crisis number, which is 844-647-1354. Yeah, so either way.
Yeah, every time I ask for a number here lately, people say, we don't use numbers no more. I mean, I don't know, but that's good. We'll put it on the lower thirds there. Hey, Keith, this has been a great discussion. Do you have any final thoughts, maybe something we missed or you want to reemphasize to the audience?
I think if I had to emphasize anything, you know, with my work with veterans and, you know, doing this for 20 years, it's if you are worried about somebody, do something, you know, ask that question, pull that person aside. You know, most of the time they probably aren't struggling with suicide, but you don't want to. And I've talked to many families that you know, look back in retrospect and say, I wish I would have done X. But yeah, reach out, ask the question, try to help somebody. If you are suicidal or you are concerned about a service member or veteran who is, you know, please reach out to Stop Soldier Suicide. You know, we'll talk to them right away and get them help they need.
Yeah, for people who listen, don't think you're by yourself. We want to try to help you. Hey, Keith,
100%.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, and appreciate what you and your team out there is doing, and God bless you, and let us know if we can ever help you.
Thanks, Sergeant Major. Appreciate what you're doing as well, getting the word out there.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks again to Keith Hodel for being with us. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military and Opline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. Don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Together, we can make a difference. There's no question in my mind about that. Remember, though, we want to hear from you. Please leave a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again for Keith being on the show today. Did an amazing job with a lot of really great advice and great information. When I talk to people about people I've known that have taken their life by suicide, I've told people on the show before, I've had 3 or 4 good friends that have taken their life. And every day I question myself whether or not I asked that question, whether or not I was there for them, whether or not I did all the right things, or I should have been around, I should have did a little bit more. Don't be afraid to ask the question. Don't be afraid to seek help or advice from somebody. just remember you're not by yourself. You got a wonderful life. Everybody has a wonderful life, but just talk to somebody. Reach out to them. If you got something that's not going right, you're not by yourself. And don't be afraid to say, hey, look, I've got a problem. I got a concern about myself. I'll be honest with you. On more than one occasion in my life, I've struggled. All of us struggle. But I never struggled, so I got down to the bottom where I just thought nothing else was going to work. But what I did was I reached out to my spouse or my friends and say, look, I'm not feeling good and something's not going right. Hey, would you mind talking about it? And really what they did is just let me talk. And most of the time, you can talk through the issues. Most of the time, you can help yourself. But if you can't, go to somebody like Keith or his organization and just sit down and talk to a professional, because they certainly will help you. Thanks again to Bungalow Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.